Overlake Farms versus Bellevue Overlake Farms. Much time as you reserve, counsel.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes if I can, Judge Apple.
You may.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. Howard Goodfriend for Overlake Farms, BLK, LLC. It's the Capella Families, LLC, owner of 75% of Overlake Farms. The findings in this case don't support the ultimate conclusion of law that an ultimate order of sale. Judge Yu, after a six-day trial, and the referees that she appointed following that trial, found that this legacy family property, 40-acre Overlake Farm, could be partitioned in kind with no loss of value, but the successor judge ordered the sale because basically the referees threw up their hands, citing the parties' disagreement over how to fund the cost of a sewer extension that would benefit both parcels. Basically,
can I ask you a question about the procedural posture? So there was a trial. First trial court judge entered findings of fact.
Correct.
The referees do their work.
Correct.
They have an initial report, then a final report.
Correct.
And there's objections filed, but there's no other evidentiary hearing or
anything. There is no other evidentiary hearing filed.
So what is the effect for our review of the referee's report? It seems to be adopted sort of by the second trial court judge. There's a numerous factual determinations, and are those findings of fact for our purpose?
They are, but they're based on basically a documentary record or based upon the evidence that was before Judge Yu. I don't think, Judge Strickey, that's a very significant problem in this case. And the reason is the referee's 65 findings of fact basically confirm what Judge Yu tentatively found in her much shorter findings of fact. And that is that the property may be partitioned in kind. There are two types of ways of avoiding the presumption or negating the presumption in favor of a partition in kind under RCW 77.52. One is that partition is physically impossible.
Your argument is that the court applied the wrong legal standard.
The court
didn't look at the owners plural.
The court made an error of law because it basically found that these parties won't get along in coming up with a way to fund the sewer, a sewer extension, if the Safara parcel developed first, if the city of Bellevue required one. But basically, because of potential disagreement, if these parties were forced to live together as neighbors, and I quote the trial court here, a sale is the, quote, easiest thing to do. And that's basically what he said. That is the wrong standard. There are two types of ways.
But, Calvin, you're not arguing that they were suddenly going to turn around and get along.
No. I mean,
in fact, they made a finding that your client rejected the recommended covenant that the referees proposed. Isn't that establishing harm to them?
No, this isn't.
Is hardship. We can't accept this condition.
No, and there's two answers to that. One is they didn't say we can't. What the referees did was say, here are our recommendations. Object, you know, comment on them. They did. They said, we agree, and Judge, you found this, and the referees found this. We will pay 75% of the cost of sewer if and when it's necessary. What they objected to and said, we don't think we should tie up over $1 million in cash based on speculation that the other side's going to develop it first, that the city's going to require it, and we don't know when it's going to happen. But when it does, we will pay.
So that was just trial argument?
It wasn't trial argument. It was a response to what the referees solicited, which was, here is our draft proposal of findings. What are your responses? They responded, and they said, this is our problem with it. And then the referee said, you have 90 days to reach an agreement, and if you don't, we're going to order a sale. I mean, that's basically what
you believe
what
the trial court had the authority to adopt the referee's recommendation in terms of the financing and impose it on the parties?
I think that's possible. Yeah, it could have. It had the discretion to do that. And I think it had the obligation, if partition is physically possible, and if, as these referees found in 65 findings, that there is no assemblage premium, that the value of the parts, you know, is not substantially less than the value of the whole, it was the same. There was no economic detriment to a partition in kind. The fact of the matter is, this sewer, if it's required, is going to have to be imposed by either parcel. So the court has an obligation to impose those covenants and servitudes that will facilitate the partition in kind, if it's physically possible and if it's economically not to the detriment of the parties. And when we talk about the economic detriment to the parties, we're really talking about this value of comparison. You know, is a partition in kind going to result in two parcels of substantially less value added together than the whole? And these findings refute that down the line. So basically, Judge Applewick, if you adopt your position and say anytime the court says, go off and settle and work out these differences, and if you don't, we're going to order a sale, it basically trumps the presumption in favor of partition in kind and gives preference to the party that wants a sale and doesn't want it partitioned in kind. And more importantly, it places disagreement as sort of a factor that really doesn't enter into the fact of a partition in kind. I mean, there is a presumption in under common law, you couldn't do anything but partition in kind. And that's been modified for the showing of great prejudice. But the statute presumes that these people who obviously can't get along enough to resolve their differences themselves, who have to go before the court to seek the court's adjudicative authority to tell them how it will be partitioned, there's already disagreement. So it's sort of like saying, you know, we can't share custody in a divorce because we don't get along. It's just the way of the world. And in a partition situation, the legislature and all the authority from this state, Williamson, I think, is probably the oldest and most clear case on this, and it's been followed steadfastly. All the cases presume partition in kind will happen unless it's physically incapable. There's a building that you can't split in half. In Hedgewald, there was a hot spring. It was the only valuable portion, and it had to be divvied up between 20 co-tenants. I mean, you have nothing like this. Or you have a situation where it's, you know, you'll result in two unbuildable or one unbuildable lot. Nothing like that. 38 lots, everyone agreed. Everyone agreed at their what their value was, and it was going to be the same whether it was sold as all 38 or whether it was divvied up the way Judge Yu and the referees proposed. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Art Harrigan, representing the respondent, Bellevue Overlake. Your Honor, under the statute that we're all dealing with here, once a finding of great prejudice from physical partition is made, the result is partition by sale.
But it now, says great prejudice to the owners, plural.
I'd be happy to address that right now, Your Honor.
752.130.
First of all, Your Honor, counsel just referred to the seminal and controlling Williamson case. Here is how the Williamson court described the applicable standard. It is still recognized that an owner has the right to retain his inheritance or investment in the form in which he has it, so long as it can be done without great prejudice to his co-tenant. Not to both parties, but to his co-tenant. In other
that
words,
isn't consistent with the statute, though.
Well, Your Honor, the statute has been this is the Supreme Court's interpretation of that statute.
I understand that,
and
but
it's very clear.
So your position is the Supreme Court has interpreted the statute to only consider prejudice to one of the owners?
Yes, Your Honor. Also, if you take a step back here, we start with the determination by the referees that, which they made twice, that there is great prejudice here from physical partition because of the fact that these one-quarter parcel would have to bear the entire cost of the sewer extension. And, you know, the argument is, well, that's only if the one-quarter owner proceeds with development, but that's not the case, because what we're talking about here is fair market value.
I understand that, but
the fair market value of that parcel is diminished by that $1.4 million expense.
Wouldn't it be within the discretion of the trial court in this equitable proceeding to order either some party to take out a line of credit, post a bond, or something to cover these costs?
Actually, Your Honor, I don't believe that's the case. And citing citing the Houston case, quote, if such partition cannot be made without great prejudice to the owners, the court must order a sale, unquote.
But if the court imposes the burden of the utility hookup as a condition, then that's apportioned between the parties. There is no undue hardship from one to the other.
Your Honor, what's really happening in that situation is that the three-quarter owner is being ordered to pay $1.2 million or $1 million approximately for the sewer extension. The only provision in the partition statute for the ordering one party to pay the other is OLTI, which arises only when partition has already been determined to be appropriate and there has to be some modest adjustment made between the parties, which is called OLTI. The fork in the road is when there is great prejudice, which here is an absolute factual determination which is amply supported by substantial evidence. Once you find great prejudice, quote, the court must order a sale, unquote. Now, what really happened here is that the referees thought, well, maybe we can fix this. They absolutely found great prejudice. Then they said, but this could be taken care of if the parties get together and agree to a covenant, which we're going to propose the terms of the covenant, but they have to agree. Essentially, the referees were trying to act as a mediator and see if they could get the parties to fix the problem. Now, we didn't complain about that, but they were exceeding their authority, and the court would be exceeding its authority if they attempted to do that, because it's an order of one party, ordering one party to pay a substantial amount of money to the other party, and there's nothing in the statute that says you can fix great prejudice by doing that. What the statute says if there's great prejudice, the party seeking sale is entitled to it, and you know the referees made their attempt, and it didn't work. And, you know, the other thing is that it is actually inaccurate to suggest that that Ms. Dugoni ever committed to pay three-quarters or that anybody ever committed to pay three-quarters under any conditions. She did testify on my questioning to something that sounded like she was agreeing to pay three-quarters up front. Then her counsel came back to make sure that the record was clear that she was saying no such thing. And what she said, she was asked, well, did you understand Mr. Harrigan's question? What did you think he was asking? And the answer is, I think he asked whether we would put $1.2 million toward a sewer expansion project if that was deemed, if the whole property was going to be developed. It seems like that's very reasonable to do that. That's in our brief at page 29 in the footnote. In other words, what she actually said was, sure, we'll pay our three-quarters if the entire parcel, 40 acres, is developed. And that was essentially their attitude all the way through, that they massively objected to the various components of the proposed covenant by the referees. The referees concluded that both because of their objections and because of the long history of disagreement about virtually everything.
But do we have a finding from the trial court that the party's intransigent has refused and it's hopeless?
We have a finding. Yes, we do, because the trial court.
We have. It would be easier finding, which is not a legal standard.
Well, Your Honor, the court approved the referee's recommendation, which was replete with findings, and those are findings in this case. There's no reason for the court to repeat everything that the referees said. And the evidence on
you
the
then
issue,
agree with appellant that we would review those findings of fact de novo because it's on documentary evidence.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm not using the microphone. Would you agree with the appellant's position that because the findings, the 65 findings in the referee's report are done just on documentary evidence, we would review that de novo?
No, Your Honor. First of all, the referee's findings aren't based solely on documentary evidence. They interviewed appraisers. They interviewed designers of the developments. They held several hearings with the parties, and they issued their preliminary report. They got further feedback. There was a record below of all kinds of careful investigation and factual determinations. And that's the whole point, because it's a fiction that Judge Yu found that this property could be partitioned physically. She said that we had not established that there was no possible way to do so, and she sent it to the referees to figure out the answer. And, of course, at the time that she made her decision, no one really knew what the status was of this sewer extension. That was something that the referees then looked into and carefully evaluated and made their findings about. And the answer is there's no way to avoid it. The one-quarter parcel is going to have to bear the entire expense if it is developed, and that means that its fair market value is instantly practically zero under the version of the under the appraised value given by the plaintiffs in this case.
That it's zero. It's just that the amount of the fair market value isn't that much greater than what the cost would be to do the sewer extension. Right? It doesn't make the parcel valueless. It's worth X, and then the sewer is Y, and it's the difference between the two that is the amount you're really referring to.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the appraiser of the plaintiffs in this case said the entire property was worth $6 million. That means a quarter is 1.5. The sewer is 1.4. There is no case that comes anywhere close to that level of great prejudice. I mean, it's obvious. And it has an instant effect on the fair market value. It doesn't matter how long it is before the property is actually developed. And what the appellants said was, well, we're not going to agree to this unless and until the developer submits his proposal to the city and finds out whether this sewer is really required. Well, you're dead in the water trying to sell this property, but you have to sell it before the developer is ever going to go to the city. That's why their whole position on this thing made it completely unworkable for that and many other reasons. and by the way, with regard to this whole issue of the owners, quote unquote, in addition to the fact that the Williamson case clearly holds to the contrary, the parties here are the plaintiff here is judicially stopped to advance that position. And we've laid this out carefully in our brief, but that argument was not even made in their motion for reconsideration of Judge Chung's adoption of the referee's recommendation. And the proposed findings and conclusions by the plaintiffs in this case which is a position they took throughout, were the burden of proof is that partition is not possible without material pecuniary loss to defendant. No one suggested that prejudice to both parties was necessary until they wrote their brief on appeal. So this entire proceeding, the first trial, the entire referee proceeding, everything that's happened in this case until it got up on appeal was conducted on the basis of that view of the law. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to focus on, rather than what the testimony was and what the parties advanced, let's focus on what the trial court found. In finding of fact 7, Judge Yu found that the Capellas agreed to pay 75% of development of a sewer extension to the property. The referees, in their finding, confirmed that. Referee finding of fact 35 confirmed again the Capellas would pay 75%. So what is this great prejudice? And let me also say there's no finding that the cost of sewer would make the Safera property worthless. The value of this property, and there's no challenge to this, as is the value of this property, whether it sold 9 lots or 38 lots, was $262,500 per lot. That's a fair market value of about $10 million. Now, the argument is that if the Safera is developed, and that is as is, okay, there's nothing in that appraisal valuation that says only if it gets sewer. That is the as is value of the property, rejecting an assemblage premium and rejecting a premium if it was smaller than the whole. So $1.4 million to connect the property to the city sewer because it takes 2,700 feet to go to where you need to get the capacity to develop any portion of the property. This is not something that just burdens the Saferas. It burdens them if they decide to develop first. But it's undisputed that if they do so, the Capellas pay their share. If there is a covenant that says that, and there's no lien, this is free and clear property. This is a first position covenant that binds the parties to pay the cost of sewer, 75%, 25%. There's no authority for this? Really? A court partitioning land doesn't have authority to impose easements? And what if one of the parcels is landlocked? That happens all the time. The courts order that an easement and allocates the cost of building a road. Sewer utilities, this is not uncommon. And it is inherent in partition that you're going to get two parcels and that some work, some imposition of servitudes may be necessary to develop it. And to just abdicate that authority and to throw up your hands and refuse to exercise discretion when there's no finding of intransigence, quite the contrary. Absolutely to the contrary. They agreed to pay it. And why can't the court impose it? How is that great prejudice? It doesn't physically present partition, and it doesn't add any cost to one parcel alone. We submit it was an error of law, and it should be reversed on that basis. Court should impose remand with directions to impose a servitude that fairly allocates the cost of development. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.